This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in Nashua, New Hampshire. Voters all over the state of New Hampshire braved sub-zero wind chills on Sunday to hit the streets for their candidates as the whirlwind campaign moved closer to Tuesday's first primary of the 2004 presidential elections. Candidates crisscrossed the state trying to meet the committed voters and swing the state's substantial undecided block, estimated to be between 8 and 15% of the state's voters. John Curry, Howard Dean, Joe Lieberman, John Edwards, and Dennis Kucinich all made campaign appearances in the Granite State on Sunday. The sixth remaining Democratic candidate, Reverend Al Sharpton, campaigned in South Carolina on Sunday. The outgoing chief U.S. weapons inspector says his inability to find illicit arms in Iraq raises serious questions about American intelligence gathering. Last year, David Kay had confidently predicted weapons would be found, but after 9 months of searching, he said Sunday, "I don't think they exist." Kay's comments also drew an "I told you so" response from Hans Blix, the former chief UN inspector whose work was heavily criticized by Kay and came to an end when the United States went to war with Iraq. Blix said the United States should have known the intelligence was flawed last year when leads followed up by UN inspectors didn't produce any results. U.S. forces aided by Iraqis searched the muddy waters of the Tigris River Monday in northern Iraq for a soldier and two pilots missing after a helicopter crashed while searching for a river patrol boat that had capsized. Two Iraqi policemen and an Iraqi translator accompanying the American soldiers in the patrol boat were killed in the incident, said a military spokesman. But one soldier was still missing while three others survived, she said. The OH-58D Kiowa Warrior helicopter, attached to the 101st Airborne Division, crashed in the Tigris in the northern town of Mosul on Sunday evening. Japan formally ordered the dispatch of ground troops into Iraq in the country's first full deployment to a combat zone since World War II. Ending months of anguished debate, Defense Agency Chief Shigeru Ishiba issued the order covering the 600 troops hours after Prime Minister Yunichiro Koizumi and the leader of the junior ruling coalition party agreed to send Japanese soldiers into Iraq. More news after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's 1 in 6 people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
A man dubbed the cruelest farmer in Britain faced jail on Friday after plunging a woman vet and an animal health inspector into a pit of manure. Veterinary surgeon Susan Potter and animal health inspector Jonathan McCulloch were filming a dead lamb and emaciated cattle on his land in Cornwall when the attack took place last February. This is Don Waller in Nashua, New Hampshire.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news. You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
George W. has come up with a bold idea that I enthusiastically support. Bush says he wants to go to the moon and to Mars. And I, for one, see no reason not to send him there. Who are we to stand in the way of progress? Unfortunately, it turns out that he didn't mean that he'd go, but that America should launch a new mission into space, along with launching multi-billions of our tax dollars out there, too. Actually, he's already taken us to the moon in terms of deficit spending. In only 3 short years, he turned America's $240 billion federal surplus into a $530 billion budget deficit. He's committed future generations to spending untold billions for his never-ending world war. He ran through a sweetheart prescription drug bill that will dole out $17 billion tax dollars a year to the drug giants. He is demanding that his multi-billion-dollar annual tax giveaway to America's richest people be made permanent. And now he wants us to buy him a Mars shot? Hey, George, how about a new Game Boy instead? His aides say that Bush's proposal is about presidential vision. Yeah, and you don't need the Hubble telescope to see where he's looking. This fuzzy-minded, big-budget Mars scheme does two things to advance his real agenda. One, it hauls space shuttles full of tax dollars into the vaults of some of his biggest campaign contributors. For decades into the future, corporate contractors will fatten themselves at this trough. Two, it will empty our public treasury of any remaining possibility to finance things we really need, such as good health care for everyone, true educational excellence available to every child, and a crash program to give America energy independence by developing our country's vast alternative energy sources. This is Jim Hightower saying, George W.'s big idea isn't about vision. It's about blinding us to the true potential of our great nation, a potential that won't be found in the stars, but in the down-to-earth people of America's grassroots.
Yes, she is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Fantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need is a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Boy, 20 below zero here in the People's Republic of Vermont when I woke up this morning. It is cold, and there's an article. I want to get into this in some detail later in the week, but an article in today's Observer, I believe, in London, in the United Kingdom, about how it may be that the thermohaline circulation pattern, that is the Gulf Stream, what we call the Gulf Stream, this is warm water coming up from the southern hemisphere and the equator up into the northern hemisphere and warming Europe. It provides as much heat to Europe as the sun does. And also it warms the east coast of the United States. If that thing shuts down, as it did about 13,000 years ago, it'll plunge Europe into an ice age. Europe will have the same climate that Alaska has. And those of us in the Northeast will discover that it's very cold. And they're saying that the scientists at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution have found, and this is all a consequence of global warming. It's kind of ironic that global warming would bring about global cooling, but anyhow. So that's number one on the fascinating stuff. I'll share all the science with you later in the week as we get into this. Democratic presidential contender John Kerry holds a shrinking 3-point lead over Howard Dean on the eve of the New Hampshire primary, according to a Reuters MSNBC Zogby poll released today. Dean shaved 4 points off Kerry's advantage in the latest 3-day tracking poll as supporters who wavered after his dismal third-place Iowa finish and screaming concession speech appeared to be returning to the fold. This is an article by John Whitesides, political correspondent for Reuters. There is no question that the race has tightened up, pollster John Zogby said. Dean stopped the bleeding in the middle of the week, and he has slowly regained some of the support he has lost. And Ohio Representative Dennis Kucinich, on the other hand, received 2% in the poll, and Al Sharpton is at 1%, which is unfortunate for their supporters. But anyway, life goes on. So today, in this hour, I want to get into some of the issues around our involvement in Iraq. I heard a presentation last week in Washington, D.C. by Joe Biden about our situation in Iraq that just knocked my socks off. It was fascinating. And I wanted to talk with somebody who really understands this stuff. And so we have on Lawrence J. Korb. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and a senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information. He was previously a senior fellow and director of national security studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Prior to that, he was a senior fellow in the Foreign Policy Studies program at the Brookings Institution, dean of the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Pittsburgh, and vice president of corporate operations at the Raytheon Company. Mr. Korb, welcome to the Tom Hartmann program.
Nice to be with you.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to have you here. Joe Biden, let me just play a little bit of a clip here first for you to hear as well as our listeners. Joe Biden suggested that there's something going on inside the White House that I thought this was quite interesting.
This administration has two axes in this administration. One axis is Cheney down through Rumsfeld, the neocon civilians in the Defense Department, and the politicos in the White House. On the other axis is... This has never occurred in my 31 years as a United States Senator, Secretary of State, and the uniformed military. A lot of progressives get it all wrong, with all due respect. The military's our friend here. The military aren't the guys that wanted to go to war. The military are not the guys who think their foreign policy makes any sense. It's the military, the good guys. I ran with McGovern in 1972. Which was a great asset. And I got elected as a 29-year-old kid, not old.
Well, I'm going to stop it at that point. He amplifies that point a couple of times. But basically, does that take correspond with yours?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, the military during the summer of 2002 were all over the place telling people that didn't make sense to go to war the way that they wanted to. I remember it was the military, General Shinseki, the Army Chief of Staff, who said that we're going to need a couple of hundred thousand people to secure the peace. And he was, you know, basically told he didn't know what he was talking about by Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz. General Zinni, who had been the head of the Central Command, which is the command that conducted the war up through 1999, warned the White House that, you know, they were stepping into a hornet's nest after they got rid of Saddam Hussein, and told them that, as far as he could see, they didn't have any plan for it. So, yeah, I mean, the military basically has allied themselves with the people in the State Department ever since this administration came into office. The great irony is that the military was anxious for Bush to come in because they didn't like Clinton because of basically some of the way that he lived his life. They had a lot of problems with that.
Yeah, the social issues, as it were. It seems to me, and maybe I'm just like out in space on this, I wanted to do a reality check with you. It seems to me like Iraq is teetering on the edge of flipping into an Iranian-style Islamic government. I mean, we've got this the Shiite cleric who is pushing for something not quite that extreme, but that may well morph into that. And it occurs to me that if Iraq becomes a theocracy or a theocratic democracy, then some of the other secular dictatorships in the region, Egypt, Syria, Jordan, would be immediately at risk of internal uprisings by their own Islamic populations. This could be the ultimate destabilizer of the Middle East, precipitated by our going into Iraq.
I mean, yeah, that would be the great irony, because one of the reasons that the so-called neocons push for us going there was that if we could make Iraq a democracy, then democracy would spread throughout that part of the world, and democracy would lead to greater economic development, greater economic gains, would get people less attracted to joining some of these terrorist organizations. And the great irony would be is it went the other way and gave us a group of theocracies there. And as bad as the governments are in Saudi Arabia and Egypt, the fact of the matter is that, you know, we do deal with them, and they do keep the situation there relatively stable.
Yeah, Saudi Arabia is another one that seems like they're ripe to fall. I mean, this whole thing with Osama bin Laden all began with his anger over the Saudis allowing the United States to put our bases there when 9/11 happened, or before 9/11 happened, when he issued his edict to America. He had said, the reason, you know, you guys pull your troops out and I'll stop pestering you, but if you're whatever you want to call it, but it's the infidels on the sacred soil of Saudi Arabia that really was making him crazy, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, because when Saddam Hussein invaded Saudi Arabia, Bin Laden said, you know, we ought to fight him, but without, you know, help from the from the United States. And then when the United States did maintain...
Wait a second. Saddam Hussein invaded...
...in that area after the war, that was something that allowed him to get a lot of support throughout the throughout the Muslim world for his crusade.
Yeah, I think I stepped on part of what you were saying. Did you say that Saddam Hussein invaded Saudi Arabia?
No, I'm sorry. When Saddam invaded Kuwait, and they were afraid he would invade Saudi Arabia.
Uh-huh. Okay. And now George Bush has pulled our troops out of Saudi Arabia. Is that not correct?
That's correct. I mean, as soon as the conflict in Iraq was over, we have dismantled our bases and taken our forces out of there. We've moved them to another part of the Muslim world. Basically, our forces are based out of Qatar, which is also a Muslim country,
right.
much smaller and much less symbolically important to the Muslim world.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't have Mecca and Medina, and
right.
So now Osama bin Laden has gotten what he wanted. Apparently, I mean, his original demand has been met. Do you think that Bush is doing this in part, hoping that bin Laden will go away now?
Well, I think basically this was a concern in the Muslim world, and it was a concern among Saudi Arabia. I mean, the Saudis did want us out. They were not happy. I mean, they only reluctantly let us come in back in 1990. It took some persuasion on the part of then-Secretary of Defense Cheney to show them that the kingdom was endangered by Saddam Hussein. And it was a very uneasy relationship from 1991 until 2003. So it was a matter of time. I mean, it was not just bin Laden. It was the whole concern about even people in the Muslim world who don't wish us harm. The idea of foreign troops on their holy soil just went against their grain.
Yeah. Now, The Guardian in the UK, the newspaper The Guardian, I don't think we have investigative reporters in the United States any longer. It's not. It doesn't pay. You know, it's not good infotainment. But they definitely do and can continue to. And Rory McCarthy, one of their very well regarded writers, put together a piece. And this was a few months ago. I mean, this was in August. In the inside story of the hunt for bin Laden, in which he suggested, and then this is more recently. Been picked up by other papers. This was the Times of India, for example, that the Pakistani president, Musharraf, has struck a deal with the U.S. immediately after Tora Bora, right after we were bombing Afghanistan, and bin Laden slipped out, apparently, from Tora Bora and into Pakistan, that Musharraf was concerned that if he captured bin Laden, that it could be the end of his political career. I mean, he's hanging on by a thread. And trying to maintain a secular government in the face of powerful Islamic forces in Pakistan. And George Bush had said, essentially, well, we just assume you didn't get bin Laden right now either, because we want to go after Iraq. And if bin Laden's still out there, people will confuse him. I mean, they didn't say this, but maybe we can morph these two things together, and people will think that Iraq has something to do with bin Laden and 9/11, and which obviously, you know, 60-70% of Americans think that, because they kept tying these things together. And well, here's the quote. The Pakistani president, General Pervez Musharraf, struck a deal with the U.S. not to seize bin Laden after the Afghan war for fear of inciting trouble in his own country. This article in the Times of India suggests that we know exactly where he is, and that now, let's see, it's the Americans accepted the argument, not least because the shift in focus to the impending war. But now that it would be more destabilizing to get him then, but now it may be less destabilizing to get him. In other words, we may be planning or preparing to arrest him, and there was a couple of false reports about his being arrested in the news last week. Do you see something like that going on?
Well, there's no doubt about the fact that if Musharraf was seen as the person responsible for capturing bin Laden, it would make things difficult for him. I really don't think that Bush could have countenanced something like that, because had he done that, there would have been people in the CIA, State Department, even the Pentagon, career people who would have known that, and that would have would have gotten out, because that's one of the great things about our government. It's pretty hard to keep things like that secret.
Pretty hard to keep a secret. We're speaking with Lawrence Korb, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Oh. You'll sleep like
okay up there.
You'll sleep like
Need more tissues?
Sleep like
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red nightie?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pants sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Your right to vote. It's something that most Americans take for granted. But today, serious questions are being asked about how we vote. Machines are used to process 98% of the votes in U.S. elections, and that includes absentee ballots. How do we know if our votes are being counted correctly? Experts say we don't know, that machines conceal the voting process, that whoever controls the machines controls the election. What is the government doing to protect your right to vote? There is no federal agency that regulates or monitors the voting machine industry. There are no restrictions on who can make, sell, or service voting equipment. They don't even have to be U.S. citizens. And there are no mandatory federal standards for voting equipment. Even if there were, experts say that voting machines can be easily rigged and impossible to safeguard. I'm Lynn Landis. I'm an investigative journalist. Learn more about this issue at my website, ecotalk.org. That's ecotalk.org.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Sick and tired of feeling famous for
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not right-wing think tanks and the RNC. We're talking with Lawrence J. Korb, a senior fellow with a left-wing think tank, the Center for American Progress, and a senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information. Mr. Korb, just to follow up on that question, if Musharraf had said, we know we're bin Laden. I mean, there's a pretty broad consensus in the media, it seems, that mm-hmm. at least in these reports, that we have a pretty good idea where he is. He's in western Pakistan there, in these tribal regions. And he said, you know, I can't go in there right now. All hell will break loose if I do that. And the U.S. then said, okay, we understand. We got other fish to fry. We're going into Iraq. That's not like a conspiracy. That's just, you know, practical. And now with the elections coming, George may be putting pressure on him to say, okay, it's time to go in and take this guy out. What do you think?
Well, again, I think, I don't have any inside information, but I do think if something like that did happen, we would know about it, because you would not be able to keep that, for example, from the career people in the agency or the State Department or the Special Forces who are out there trying to get him. Now, obviously, nothing is impossible, but I just don't think that we would be able to make, you know, keep that a secret. I mean, as I said
well,
before...
Well, it's apparently not a secret. I mean, it's been reported in the Guardian.
Well, yeah, I understand, but this was... Tora Bora was in the winter of 2001. So it's, I mean, basically it's, over 2 years, and I'm, you know, as I say, I don't have any inside information, and certainly I would agree with you that if you capture bin Laden, you know, this year, the election's all but over. So I don't doubt that. And I also agree with you that the administration has, unfortunately, successfully linked Iraq and, you know, Afghanistan as one war, basically, against the terrorists who struck us, and in fact it's not.
Yeah, this the source of this information apparently is this Mr. Ijaz, who I was looking through the article. I hadn't marked it up.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Can you speak a little louder?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, the source of the information was apparently this a fellow who's pretty wired in here. I don't want to flog that one.
Well, I mean, if it is true, I mean, it's a horrible thing, and I think if it did come out, then obviously I think Bush would have an awful lot to answer for.
Yeah. What about an exit strategy then? First of all, do you think that it's possible that Iraq is going to go the way of Iran, and that we're going to be facing a situation like Jimmy Carter faced when the Shah fell?
That's possible. I don't think it's probable right now. I think the Ayatollah Sistani basically wants to ensure that the group that takes sovereignty does reflect the general population. He does not want to see U.S. puppets in there, or the Sunnis dominated, because remember that we abandoned the Shiites after the first Gulf War, and there's still a great deal of suspicion. So I think basically he wants to make sure that the Shiites get their fair share of the representation, and that's why he's basically taking the stand he has now, not because he wants an Iranian-style government. Now, if the Shiites do dominate over the years, that could happen, because there are people in that sect part of Iraq who do admire or want an Iranian-style theocracy.
Yeah. Okay. I had one other quick question about an exit strategy. We've got to take a break here for 3 minutes. Can you stick around for another five?
No, I've got to go. I've got to give a speech to a group of government employees here.
No problem. Okay. Thank you very much for being with us, Lawrence J.
Korb.
Okay. Great now. Thank you. Senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, this is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
There's a lot more to hibernation than a long, deep sleep. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The cartoon bear gorges itself until the fall when it curls up in its den and falls asleep, waking up stretching and yawning after the spring thaw. Not surprisingly, that picture of hibernation is very misleading. Hannah Carey is a veterinary researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison who studies hibernating ground squirrels. She says hibernation actually includes frequent periods of activity.
No mammalian hibernators, these squirrels or any of the other mammals that hibernate, go through the entire winter in the cold stored state without undergoing what we call a periodic arousal. They all arouse periodically. Basically, it's like turning on the engine of a car.
Carey says it's not known why hibernating animals stir every few days because many, including ground squirrels, don't eat or drink during these periods. And Carey says hibernation is not triggered by environmental cues such as decreasing sunlight, temperature, and food. Instead, she says hibernation is governed by some kind of internal clock. The ground squirrels she studies want to hibernate with or without cold weather, no matter how long the daylight or how much food they have.
We trap them or collect them in the summertime. They live in this animal facility that's a normal room temperature and all the food and water they want. Around October, they will try to hibernate in this warm room. Their brains tell them it's time.
Carey says it's not known if hibernation provides the rejuvenating effects of normal sleep. She says some scientists even contend that hibernators need to sleep during their arousal periods because hibernation tires them out. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Don't know what's going on. You've been away for far too long.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Greetings to our newest affiliate, by the way, our newest station, KLAV in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're going to have some bumper music in your saluting Las Vegas coming out of the next break. Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi. Oh, no, it's time for a Berlusconi alert. Yes, indeed. It's the official national anthem of Italy.
Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, this from yesterday's New York Times, addressed a cheering, flag-waving crowd at a lavishly choreographed celebration on Saturday for the 10th anniversary of Forza Italy, Italia, the political party he started. Now, here's the thing. For those of you who may not be familiar, for our new listeners in Las Vegas, Silvio Berlusconi is the Prime Minister of Italy. He started out as a small-time crook. He's under indictment right now for bribing a judge. His business partner just went to prison for it. He started out as a small-time crooked businessman, bought a radio station, bought a TV station, bought another radio station, bought another TV station, bought a newspaper, and now he owns 90%. He owns media in Italy that reaches 90% of the population. He owns virtually all of the television stations and networks, most of the radio stations, and the major newspapers. And once he had achieved that level of media dominance, this is a cautionary tale for us here in the United States. This is what happens when capitalism becomes monopoly. And once he had control of the media, he ran for prime minister. Well, actually, you don't run for prime minister in Italy. You get your party elected to the parliament, and they appoint you. And so he created a party, and his party was called Forza Italia, which is what they yell at soccer games. It means go Italy, more or less, roughly translated. And sure enough, he won. Now the challenge is this party just a cult of personality around a rich guy who owns all the TV and radio stations? And apparently, I mean, this is one of the big debates in Italy right now. I'm here, the prime minister told the throng of supporters who packed a fascist-era assembly hall here. He's also the guy who refused to criticize Benito Mussolini, in fact said good things about him a few months ago, one of our more recent Berlusconi alerts. And then we get into this, though Forza Italia holds more seats in the Italian parliament than any of the other parties, it has no coherent ideological underpinning or direction. Instead, critics say, it has Mr. Berlusconi, a phenomenally wealthy media mogul with the ability to exert influence over much of what Italians see on television or read in magazines and books. Yes, indeed. Our Berlusconi alert, by the way, he just got a facelift and reannounced, and for the last month he's been hiding out. He just came back. All the bruises are gone. And Berlusconi looks great. He's back in charge. Mussolini would be proud. Meanwhile, here in the United States, speaking of the dictionary definition of fascism, the merging of corporate and state interests, as we're seeing more and more, a government that is in the pocket of huge corporations, monopolistic corporations in many cases. We're seeing a transition, a very rapid transition, from a nation dominated by the middle class, as we were from the mid-1930s up until the Reagan Revolution. The Reagan Revolution was, hey, let's take power away from the people, bust up the unions. Anything that has to do with grassroots power, let's destroy it and hand that power to the corporate elite. And the process has been continued. And Bill Clinton did nothing to slow it down. In fact, he sped it up dramatically by pushing so hard for passage of NAFTA and GATT, finally getting it through over a very reluctant Congress in a lame duck, a midnight session just before the Christmas recess. And so now here's the situation. Between 1970 and 2003, total U.S. debt. See, people are making less and less. People's average income is collapsing. And as a consequence of the average income collapsing, what we're seeing is that people are trying to maintain their standard of living. They're trying to hang on. And they're not doing it very successfully. And in the process of trying to hang on, they're going into debt. In fact, most of the cash, or much of the cash that people are living on these days, has been coming from refinancing their homes. It was $67,000. Now, you've got inflation in there. These are all, by the way, U.S. Treasury Department figures. You've got $67,000. These reflect the increase in the value of homes. 1980, $17,300. 1990, $38,000. So in 2000, $67,000. It's now $87,000. So in the 3 years of the Clinton administration, the average family in America has added $20,000 to their debt. And mostly,
they're refinancing their houses, and they're taking that cash, they're going deeper in debt, and they're taking that cash and they're putting their kids through college, or they're trying to maintain their lifestyle. And it is wiping out families. Just absolutely extraordinary. 52% of voters this January 24th, this from 2 days ago, 52% of voters, this is the new Newsweek poll, 52% of voters don't want to see George Bush reelected. Interesting times we live in, my friends. Interesting times. This is going to be a real interesting election. Dick Cheney has gone back to what he was doing before, just laying out blatant lies. Just laying out. By the way, before I get into that, have you seen how the media is all? Everybody's like, how could Wesley Clark condone Michael Moore saying that George W. was a deserter? How can they use the word deserter? Desertion is a penalty for desertion is death. Well, check out the Uniform Code of Military Justice, UCMJ. If you're absent without leave for more than 30 days during time of war, you're a deserter. And I encourage you to go to Democrats.org, www.democrats.org. They actually have scanned photographs of Bush's military records and letters from his commanders saying that he's been AWOL for a year, which means desertion. So I'd say, bring it on. I mean, I think this is one of the reasons Wesley Clark has been coy. He's not been saying, well, Moore should have said that. And, this is an issue that they're just going to keep dangling out there and dangling out there until somebody blows it open. Unfortunately, the two Army officials who documented Bush's desertion are both dead. On the other hand, and they both died in the last couple of years, on the other hand, the good news is they both left affidavits that were signed and sworn and all that sort of thing. So this could be something that comes back to bite George Bush big time. So Dick Cheney's running around lying to us. Here's the latest lie. This January 22nd, last week, quote, there's overwhelming evidence there was a connection between al-Qaeda and the Iraqi government. I am very confident that there was an established relationship there. Well, let's look at the facts. The New York Times reported on January 15th of this year, quote, Saddam Hussein warned his Iraqi supporters to be wary of joining forces with foreign Arab fighters entering Iraq to battle U.S. troops. The document provides another piece of evidence challenging the Bush administration contention of close cooperation between Saddam's regime and al-Qaeda terrorists. Apparently, Dick Cheney doesn't read the New York Times. On that same day, the New York Times reported, and I quote, CIA interrogators have already elicited from the top al-Qaeda officials in custody that before the American-led invasion, Osama bin Laden had rejected entreaties from some of his lieutenants to work jointly with Saddam. These guys hated each other. Saddam was crushing the religious right, as it were, in his own country. He was running a secular dictatorship rather than a religious dictatorship. Fact. Secretary of State, this is from the New York Times on the 9th of this month, Secretary of State Colin Powell conceded Thursday that despite his assertions to the United Nations last year, he had no smoking gun proof of a link between the government of Iraq, of Iraqi President Saddam Hussein, and terrorists of al-Qaeda. Quote, I have not seen smoking gun concrete evidence about the connection, end quote, Powell said. Yet Dick Cheney says, there's overwhelming evidence. And then he cites none. We have a vice president who may be under indictment by the French for bribery and corruption, who is being sued by one of his own right-wing organizations, Judicial Watch, for getting into bed with the big oil companies back in 2001 when they were carving up the Iraqi oil fields before 9/11, when they put together the energy policy of the United States. And who now has the audacity to go on NPR and lie. I mean, he just left them speechless. Fact. This is from the National Journal on 8903. Three former Bush administration officials who worked on intelligence and national security issues said the pre-war evidence tying al-Qaeda was tenuous, exaggerated, and often at odds with the conclusions of key intelligence agencies. And David Kaye now is saying, the intelligence agency should take the heat for this, not George Bush. Yeah, he doesn't want to suffer the same fate Joe Wilson did 195 days ago when his wife was outed. David Kaye knows which side his bread is buttered on. Whew. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk about what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
The Mike Molloy Show.
An interview with George and Pickles from the current issue of Ladies Home Journal. They're asked about what September 11, 2001 was like for them personally. Although over 3,000 people had just perished, George W. was able to find some humor by the end of the day. The day ended on a relatively humorous note. The agent said, "You'll be sleeping downstairs." And I said, "No, we like our own bed." So I told the agent, "We're going upstairs." And the agent comes running up and says, "Run your attack. We need you downstairs." So there we go. I'm in my running shorts and my T-shirt, and I'm barefoot.
barefooted, got the dog in one hand, Laura had the cat.
I don't have my contacts in, and I'm in my fuzzy house slippers.
We're heading straight down to the basement because there's an incoming unidentified airplane which is going here toward the White House, and then the guy says it's a friendly airplane, and we hustle all the way back upstairs and go to bed.
And we just lay there thinking about the way we must have looked.
We got a laugh out of it.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas with your neon flashing and your one-arm bandits crashing all those hopes down the drain. Viva Las Vegas turning day into nighttime, turning night into daytime. If you see it once, you'll never be the same again.
Yes, indeed. Viva Las Vegas and welcome to KLAV, our newest affiliate. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Halliburton, perhaps you saw the thing on 60 Minutes last night where Halliburton says that they've been able to, under Dick Cheney, they set up this offshore company in the Cayman Islands that they then use that company to sell oil rig equipment to Saddam Hussein. This was in 97, 98, when Bill Clinton was saying, please don't do business with Saddam, and Dick Cheney was saying, oh, but we're not an American company. We're a Cayman Island company. And even today, Halliburton is selling oil field equipment, making money off of and helping enhance the economies of Syria and Iran, among other, you know, bad players around the world. But those seem to be the ones. And 60 Minutes did an expose on this last night. Well, Halliburton's response, of course, they didn't go on 60 Minutes, but we don't know if they're going to run this during the Super Bowl. There's kind of, you know, rumors swirling. But, the networks have said no to the MoveOn.org ad. But as the Associated Press reports, a, quote, new television spot running says Halliburton supplies hot meals, laundry, and telephone links for soldiers in Iraq. The ad shows a man in desert camouflage holding a phone, his lips trembling and shouting, it's a girl. The ad concludes, Halliburton, proud to protect our troops. In fact, here it is.
Halliburton delivers hot meals, supplies, clean clothing, and communications to our soldiers.
Although they've been soundly criticized for serving dirty food, and we had on the one woman whose son had to travel out to the airport because Halliburton wouldn't deliver the mail to the specific places where the troops were because it was too dangerous. So the troops had to travel the what they call the highway of death to get their mail. But anyhow, Halliburton says,
so they can be a little closer to home.
Yeah, right.
It's a girl!
Halliburton, proud to serve our troops.
Yeah, proud to make money off our troops. I mean, this is Halliburton has been reprimanded by the Pentagon for serving unsanitary food to U.S. troops in Iraq, is also facing scrutiny for overcharging the government and accepting $6 million in bribes for work in Iraq. Remarkable. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. News without conflicts of global corporate interest.
From a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Doolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dogs?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Doolittle, talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Who says
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you
it's
hate me?
True.
You why hate me?
Why don't I put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in Nashua, New Hampshire. The outgoing chief U.S. weapons inspector says his inability to find illicit arms in Iraq raises serious questions about American intelligence gathering. Last year, David Kaye had confidently predicted weapons would be found, but after 9 months of searching, he said Sunday, "I don't think they exist." Kaye's comments also drew an I told you so response from Hans Blix, the former chief UN inspector whose work was heavily criticized by Kaye and came to an end when the United States went to war with Iraq. Blix said the United States should have known the intelligence was flawed last year when leads followed up by UN inspectors didn't produce any results. Voters all over the state of New Hampshire braved sub-zero wind chills on Sunday to hit the streets for their candidates as the whirlwind campaign moved closer to Tuesday's first primary of the 2004 presidential elections. Candidates crisscrossed the state trying to meet the committed voters and swing the state's substantial undecided block, estimated to be between 8 and 15% of the state's voters. John Kerry, Howard Dean, Joe Lieberman, John Edwards, and Dennis Kucinich all made campaign appearances in the Granite State on Sunday. The sixth remaining Democratic candidate, Reverend Al Sharpton, campaigned in South Carolina on Sunday. Japan formally ordered the dispatch of ground troops into Iraq in the country's first full deployment to a combat zone since World War II. Ending months of anguished debate, Defense Agency Chief Shigeru Ishiba issued the order covering the 600 troops hours after Prime Minister Yunichiro Koizumi and the leader of the junior ruling coalition party agreed to send Japanese soldiers into Iraq. U.S. forces aided by Iraqis searched the muddy waters of the Tigris River Monday in northern Iraq for a soldier and two pilots missing after a helicopter crashed while searching for a river patrol boat that had capsized. Two Iraqi policemen and an Iraqi translator accompanying the American soldiers in the patrol boat were killed in the incident, said a military spokesman. But one soldier was still missing while three others survived, she said. The OH-58D Kiowa Warrior helicopter, attached to the 101st Airborne Division, crashed in the Tigris in the northern town of Mosul on Sunday evening. More news after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
An off-duty British soldier has been arrested in Cyprus for biting off part of another man's ear during a fight, police in Cyprus said Monday. The 30-year-old suspect is being held on suspicion of grievous bodily harm and assault for a fracas in a nightclub at the coastal Larnaca Resort Sunday morning, police said. This is Don Waller in Nashua, New Hampshire.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
George W. has come up with a bold idea that I enthusiastically support. Bush says he wants to go to the moon and to Mars. And I, for one, see no reason not to send him there. Who are we to stand in the way of progress? Unfortunately, it turns out that he didn't mean that he'd go, but that America should launch a new mission into space, along with launching multi-billions of our tax dollars out there, too. Actually, he's already taken us to the moon in terms of deficit spending. In only 3 short years, he turned America's $240 billion federal surplus into a $530 billion budget deficit. He's committed future generations to spending untold billions for his never-ending world war. He ran through a sweetheart prescription drug bill that will dole out $17 billion tax dollars a year to the drug giants. He is demanding that his multi-billion dollar annual tax giveaway to America's richest people be made permanent. And now he wants us to buy him a Mars shot? Hey, George, how about a new Game Boy instead? His aides say that Bush's proposal is about presidential vision. Yeah, and you don't need the Hubble telescope to see where he's looking. This fuzzy-minded, big-budget Mars scheme does 2 things to advance his real agenda. 1, it hauls space shuttles full of tax dollars into the vaults of some of his biggest campaign contributors. For decades into the future, corporate contractors will fatten themselves at this trough. 2, it will empty our public treasury of any remaining possibility to finance things we really need, such as good health care for everyone, true educational excellence available to every child, and a crash program to give America energy independence by developing our country's vast alternative energy sources. This is Jim Hightower saying, George W.'s big idea isn't about vision. It's about blinding us to the true potential of our great nation, a potential that won't be found in the stars, but in the down-to-earth people of America's grassroots.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I didn't think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
This is a massive stockpile of biological weapons and is capable of killing millions. We know that the regime has produced thousands of tons of chemical agents, including mustard gas, sarin nerve gas, VX nerve gas.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And it's time, well, let's start our hour with a conservative alert. It's the right-wing church of intimidation. Look out, Texans. Pastor Big Brother is watching you. The LA Times reports Pastor Jim Norwood is on a mission to obliterate privacy and embarrass citizens who patronize local and entirely legal adult entertainment shops. In an attempt to drive the businesses out of the neighborhood, Norwood photographs the license plates of the cars in the adult video store parking lot, uses an online database to get their names and addresses, and then mails a postcard, not even a letter, but a postcard of the incriminating photo directly to the homes of the customers. I think that's called stalking. Color me old-fashioned. But Shar is our guest on the line? Oh, great. Okay. Moving along here, a friend of mine, Mark Gaffney, who's the president of the AFL-CIO in Michigan, sent me a copy of this book and said, you got to take a look at this thing. And Michael H. Belzer, Sweatshop on Wheels, Winners and Losers in Trucking Deregulation. And Michael Belzer has both worked as a truck driver and done extensive research in the trucking industry. Before earning his PhD, he was a Teamster truck driver for 10 years. And for eight of those years, he drove a tank truck in regional over-the-road operations, logging more than 750,000 miles. And he has really dug into this issue of what's going on with the trucking industry. Mr. Belzer, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you very much.
First of all, just set this up for us. I remember when I was when I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, in a working class neighborhood, and a lot of my friends' parents worked at Oldsmobile, you know, and they had good union jobs and they could raise a family on it. And one of my best friends was real interested in becoming a truck driver when he grew up because it was good pay. There was job security. It was a solid thing back then. This was in the 1960s. What's happened?
Well, since the 1960s, there's been a lot of change. One of the big changes, of course, is the policy of deregulating a lot of the industries in the United States, and one of them was the trucking industry. And deregulation is really removing all of those limits to market competition. So, essentially, once the markets were unleashed, the industry was changed quite radically. During my time as a truck driver, probably about half of it was spent before deregulation and half of it spent after deregulation. That is, this law was passed in 1980, and I had a marked change in my earnings. They went down about 30-35% in a heartbeat.
Instead of saying that deregulation unleashed competition, wouldn't it be more accurate to say deregulation unleashed the possibility of monopoly? I mean, there's a difference between competition is when you're trying to be better than your, you know, it's like in baseball or football, you compete, but everybody has the same rules, and whoever does the better job wins. But in monopoly uses the rules of war. You know, destroy your enemy, buy out your enemy, do whatever it takes to control the market so that once you have control of the market, you can just squeeze more and more blood out of that turnip. And this seems to me, I mean, thousands, as a result of deregulation, thousands of small trucking operations across the country went out of business. Is that not accurate?
Well, it's true that a lot of trucking companies went out of business, and for those who've been around since before 1980, they'll remember a whole legion of legendary companies that go back since back into the 30s and before that simply went out of business very, very quickly. And not because they were dinosaurs, but because the rules that they had to follow before 1980 suddenly were changed and quite abruptly. The thing is, it's not exactly a monopoly. When you deregulate the telecommunications industry, you've created, especially in think of phone companies, you still have monopolies, and those monopolies have more power than they used to have. And in the case of the electric utilities is another good example. You have monopolies, inherent monopolies, which have been substantially deregulated trying to create competition. But it's actually the competition itself that creates this dog-eat-dog environment. And in trucking, there has been an explosion of competition, and there are now hundreds of thousands of companies where there were just maybe 30,000 before. And so at the same time you see really big giants out there, you see the Yellow Roadway Combination, or you see UPS, or you see Schneider and Hunt and Swift. At the other end of the world, you've got just hundreds of thousands of individual owner-operators and small operators of various kinds who are kind of at the very end of the food chain, and that's what makes for this kind of destructive competitive environment.
Interesting. Very interesting.
We don't have a monopoly because there's a huge level of competition. See, there's two kinds of regulation. One regulation is designed to create more competition in an industry which is naturally competitive, and another one which has been done over the years in an industry where it's not naturally competitive, like in electric power, where you have to build enormous power plants and so forth. Then you regulate to make sure that prices are kept down, because in fact what monopolies do is raise the price and lower the quantity of service. And in the case of trucking, if you look at it overall, the price has declined. That is, the rates that are charged have declined over the last two and a half decades in absolute terms, and then as a result, there's less money left for the carriers, and of course, a whole lot less money left for the drivers.
Yeah, although in some monopoly situation, I suppose if you're defining monopoly as controlling...
It's control of the marketplace.
Well, not just a marketplace, but in the case of electric and you know, the, and telephone, controlling an essential service.
Right.
You know, that traditionally, or that at various points in our history had been considered part of the commons. That would be one definition, but I would suggest that in some ways Walmart has become a monopoly. There are, you know, for example, in my community, all of the stores that sell, you know, if I wanted to buy a pillow for the bed, for example, I have to drive 70 miles to buy one from something other than a Walmart.
Other than a Walmart or Linens or Us or whatever those places are that specialize that are big chains. That's correct.
Well, yeah, and I'm not in a big enough city that there's one of those. So, you know, I mean, it's Walmart or nothing here, right, here in central Vermont. And,
well, they've certainly created
and
that.
And they've driven prices down.
You're absolutely right. Walmart has done that. Walmart is what we call in economics a monopsony. That is, it controls the purchase of labor, for example, in your small market, and in doing so can keep those rates down. And it also is a monopsony in terms of its global power, and it's able to even reduce the prices for goods coming out of China. So even the Chinese are getting pinched by Walmart.
Monopsony. This is a word I've never heard before. What's the genesis of that?
It's the monopsony is someone who is a dominant consumer, whereas you have monopoly, which is a dominant producer. So a dominant consumer, the classic example is a company town. You're probably familiar with those. Certainly have them up there in the paper mill area, where they control the labor force in that town because there's no other jobs.
Yeah.
And the company town environment creates a situation where every penny that they raise wages, and the monopsonist, that big operator, the paper mill, let's say, every penny that they raise wages for one person, they have to raise for everybody else. So they have an incentive to keep wages down for everyone.
Yeah. So how does this work on wheels? Why do you refer to truck driving, to the trucking industry, or to trucks or whatever, as sweatshops on wheels?
Well, they create such a hyper-competitive environment that they keep the earnings down to a very bare minimum. This is one of those industries where Wall Street doesn't want to invest because there's not enough return, just at the biggest level. And when that low return is squeezed down to the individual, it means that the individual is working for less money, is working longer hours, probably in the case of most truckload non-union over-the-road drivers, he's not paid for his loading and unloading time or delay times. All that squeezing, and with the additional factor, that is, of the leased owner-operator who's not really truly operating his own trucking company but is leased onto somebody, he is squeezed the most. And we found that he makes the least earnings on average. So you have low wages, long hours, unsafe and unhealthy conditions, and you have a high degree of subcontracting, and those are the four characteristics you look for to see if you got sweatshops.
So what's the solution here to the sweatshops on wheels?
Well, that's a pretty difficult problem. You're absolutely right. One solution, of course, is the unionization. That's what we had before deregulation, and that's what we lost afterwards before deregulation. 85% of all the trucking companies in the United States were unionized. And today that...
this was the Teamsters primarily.
Yeah, the Teamsters primarily. The auto workers have a few, and there's a few others, and different other, generally in private carriers, there's some others. But primarily it's the Teamsters, and that's Mark Gaffney's background. That's the industry he comes out of. Mm-hmm. And the Teamsters used to organize or used to represent most drivers. So as a result, things were kept under control and competition was under control. And they now represent perhaps about 15% of all the drivers out there.
Yeah,
that's
my perception of this is that in order to have a game where you know it can be reasonably played, the game of business, for example, you have to have a reasonably level playing field and rules that give both sides equal amounts of power. And what unions have done is they've given power to labor, whereas the ability to aggregate capital, that is the state authorizing the formation of corporations, have given the ability of capital to have power. And wherever we see unions collapsing, we see extreme power being concentrated with the corporations and the middle class, the working class, being wiped out.
Yeah, that's true. The problem is that you have, as you point out, a great deal of concentration of power that the state helps support through the use of its incorporation laws and the limited liability corporation.
Right.
And so all that power that they get to act as a state anointed individuals makes them very powerful. And the deunionization means that the individual workers out there who used to make a middle-class living now have much less power in the bargaining relationship, and as a result, they earn a whole lot less, and the ability of the union to do anything about it is limited.
Yeah, we're speaking with Michael Belzer, the author of Sweatshops on Wheels. I want to ask you about H.R. 4062, if you're familiar with it, when we come back from this break. Winners and losers in trucking deregulation. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering,
full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, when the road was full of mud. I come in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
And welcome back. Long hours, low wages, and unsafe workplaces characterized sweatshops 100 years ago, says Michael Belzer. These same conditions that plague American trucking today. In his book, Sweatshops on Wheels, Winners and Losers in Trucking Deregulation, he exposes the dark side of government deregulation in America's interstate trucking industry. In the years since the Reagan Revolution of the 80s, deregulation in the 80s, median earnings have dropped 30%. Most long-haul truckers earn less than half of pre-regulation wages. Work weeks average more than 60 hours. Today, America's long-haul truckers are working harder and earning less than at any time during the last four decades. Mr. Belzer, are you familiar with H.R. 4062, this bill put forth by Representative Gerald Klezeka?
You'll have to fill me in a little bit.
Well, it was submitted on March 22nd of this year and has been referred to the Committee on Education and the Workforce, and it's to repeal the 1938 exemption to the motor carrier's employees.
Okay.
You're familiar with this?
I think so. Yes, this is the motor carrier exemption to the hours of service or to the
right.
To the minimum wage, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
As far as I know, I mean, I don't have a lot of detail on it. I just have the news story about it being proposed. Is that going to make things better or worse?
Oh boy, I don't know if it will change things or not. It might. There's kind of a this has got a little trick to it, a zing to it, that I frankly did not know when I wrote the book. And thanks to a truck driver in Oregon who contacted me, I've had a lot of calls and emails since the book was written, I've been able to figure out what went wrong and where the problem was with the Fair Labor Standards Act. When truck drivers, there's two kinds of problems. First of all, truck drivers are exempt from anybody engaged, any trucking company, or anybody working for a trucking company, and you can be just a local office worker. You don't even have to be a truck driver. You can be a local cartage driver. But you're exempt from it's the 40-hour work week, the maximum hours number after which you get time and a half.
Sure.
And that exemption, I don't know if this bill is to address that one. The other aspect is related to the minimum wage, and that is a substantial number of truck drivers aren't earning a minimum wage, but they're paid on a piecework basis, or they're paid as subcontractors, in which case it's either very hard to determine if they're being paid minimum wage, or they're simply not covered by the minimum wage provisions. So
now these, by the way, are all regulations. I mean, these are all laws that are in place that allow this. So to say that the industry was deregulated is a bit of a misnomer. It has been regulated in favor. It has been re-regulated in favor of business.
Well, it's been economic deregulation. That is the regulation that the Interstate Commerce Commission once was responsible for. The Interstate Commerce Commission has been put to a death back in 95. But the Interstate Commerce Commission required before 1980 that you had to file rates. You had to make sure the rates were compensatory for the cost of hauling making the movement. You had to prove that there was a market basis for your service. and you're regulated on where you could haul and how much you could haul it for. So it was a set of regulations that is particular to the Interstate Commerce Commission, and that's the rules that were eliminated. Of course, there's plenty more new regulations, which we often call social regulation, which has been created out there one way or the other, or hasn't been changed, like the Fair Labor Standards Act.
Yeah, great.
They're usually designed to try to put the genie back in the bottle after it's already out. That's kind of the problem.
Which is a tough one.
Yeah, tough
Michael
one.
Belzer, thank you for being on our program today. I appreciate the insight into this. Sweatshops on Wheels, Winners and Losers in Trucking Deregulation. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. If our truckers out there have thoughts on this, our number 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, or anybody else, if you've got any thoughts on this. From here, I want to get into another monopoly or monopoly, or as it were, what's going on here with CBS. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
There's a lot more to hibernation than a long, deep sleep. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The cartoon bear gorges itself until the fall, when it curls up in its den and falls asleep, waking up stretching and yawning after the spring thaw. Not surprisingly, that picture of hibernation is very misleading. Hannah Carey is a veterinary researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison who studies hibernating ground squirrels. She says hibernation actually includes frequent periods of activity.
No mammalian hibernators, these squirrels or any of the other mammals that hibernate, go through the entire winter in the cold stored state without undergoing what we call a periodic arousal. They all arouse periodically. Basically, it's like turning on the engine of a car.
Carey says it's not known why hibernating animals stir every few days, because many, including ground squirrels, don't eat or drink during these periods. And Carey says hibernation is not triggered by environmental cues such as decreasing sunlight, temperature, and food. Instead, she says hibernation is governed by some kind of internal clock. The ground squirrels she studies want to hibernate with or without cold weather, no matter how long the daylight or how much food they have.
We trap them or collect them in the summertime. They live in this animal facility that's a normal room temperature and all the food and water they want. Around October, they will try to hibernate in this warm room. Their brains tell them it's time.
Carey says it's not known if hibernation provides the rejuvenating effects of normal sleep. She says some scientists even contend that hibernators need to sleep during their arousal periods because hibernation tires them out. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with an important ghastly hallucinations and erectile dysfunction. So when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I
heard newborn babies crying like a moaning dove. An old man with broken teeth, stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
We've also discovered through intelligence that Iraq has a growing fleet of manned and unmanned aerial vehicles that could be used to disperse chemical or biological weapons across broad areas. We're concerned that Iraq is exploring ways of using these UAVs for missions targeting the United States.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. We're exploring some of the lies George Bush used to get us into a war in which we have lost more than 500 of our young men and women, yet he has not attended a single funeral. Bill Clinton attended funerals. George Bush Sr. attended funerals. Ronald Reagan attended funerals. Jimmy Carter attended funerals. Jack Kennedy attended funerals. Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon. Dwight D. Eisenhower. Harry Truman. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. George Bush, no. No. Wouldn't be photogenic. Anyhow, with the we were talking about trucking and deregulation here. Tom in San Antonio, Texas, is on the line. Hey, Tom, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good afternoon.
What are your thoughts on all this? What's your experience?
Well, you're talking about the deregulation and this new hours of service they just throwed at us. I've been out here 43 years. And I'm making about the same money I was making in 1980.
Wow. Welcome to the Reagan Revolution.
Yeah. You know. I lost some of the best jobs I ever had during the Reagan administration.
Yeah.
But what I call for on these hours of service was limited to 70 hours. Well, now if you set somewhere for a day or 34 hours straight, you can start your 70 hours all over with. Well, in other words, you can work more hours and man in the 8-day period than what you used to. And plus, we were allowed to drive 10 hours, and they had to take an 8-hour break. Now, and you had to get the 10 hours done in a 15-hour period. Now, you got 14 hours to do 11 hours driving, so that means they expect you to drive another 50, 60, 70 miles further than what you've been doing in hours less time.
And you got a 3-hour break instead of an 8-hour break.
Well, you got the 3-hour break, but then you have to, you're supposed to stay in the sleeper of the truck for 10 solid hours. And who can sleep for 10 hours straight?
Yeah.
I mean, hardly anybody gets 10 hours sleep anymore.
So these regulations are having the effect of making it harder for you to earn a living, and do you think that they're affecting your ability to be a safe driver?
I really do. I've got almost 3 million miles safe driving, but to do 11 hours, you're looking at, especially down in this area, you're looking at close to 700 miles in a day.
Yeah.
In one 11-hour period, and then to have 10 hours off, you go to bed and you go to sleep, and you're gonna wake up in 7-8 hours, and then you got to sit around another 2 hours before you can leave. So then you're tarter, and I can't see how they can call it safety. Too many tired drivers out here on the road. Well, they're going to have more tired drivers now than they ever had.
Tom, are you an independent or are you an employee? And if you're an employee, are you a member of the Teamsters or some other union?
I'm not a member of the Teamsters now. I've got enough time in with the Teamsters to retire from other jobs, but I'm not now, and I'm driving for a company.
I see. Yeah. What do you think the solution is, Tom?
Well, if we could push it back to what we used to have, because there was much more chance to make a living than he is now.
Go back before Reagan. Great.
Yeah.
Tom, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Very kind of you to call in. This is symptomatic. This is not just the trucking industry. This is symptomatic of what is happening all across America. We are trading in good-paying jobs for poor-paying jobs, And the people at the top, corporations at the top, are making more and more and more, getting richer and richer and richer. And it's just wrong. It is just wrong to have and see people say, oh, but it's they're smarter or they're brighter or they work harder. No, it's they've been able to get the rules of the game changed because the Supreme Court has ruled that corporations can bribe politicians and not call it a bribe. That's the bottom line here. They get the rules of the game changed. They've thrown out the protections that Roosevelt got put into place and that were put into place under Truman and even under Eisenhower. They throw these things out right across the board, going all the way back to 1890 when Senator Sherman introduced and passed the Sherman Antitrust Act, Senate Bill number 1. And the result of this is are these huge monopolies, whether it's in the media or whether it's in retailing. Here, check this out. With the recent uproar over CBS's censorship of advertising during the Super Bowl, you know, this thing with MoveOn.org, wanting to simply run an ad where they showed kids doing various jobs, you know, hauling garbage, working on an assembly line, little children. And then at the very end, it just says, guess who's going to pay for George Bush's $1 trillion debt or deficit? I forget which word they used. And, you know, very straightforward. And CBS said that's not considered fit for the public airway, or, you know, to this effect, that they're not going to run advocacy ads. It was too controversial, they said. Now, this ad says that the national debt will have to be paid off by future generations. There's controversy about that? And secondly, it says that the Bush administration created trillions of dollars in deficits, which the president's own budget documents absolutely and unambiguously confirm. I mean, what is controversial about this ad? It tells the truth. Now, on the other hand, CBS permits Walmart to air ads on its station. This is from the Center for American Progress. And not just ads flacking products. As the Washington Post notes, the world's biggest company is, quote, stepping up its slate of feel-good television ads with more spots featuring happy employees as well as examples of Walmart's community involvement. The ads are an effort to counter surveys that, quote, showed consumers mistrusted the company's labor practices and its impact on the community, end quote. In other words, an effort to whitewash Walmart's controversial public record. In the last year alone, they've faced lawsuits from the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, as well as investigations into their use of illegal workers. On top of that, PBS reports that Walmart often costs communities millions in lost wages, increased services, and lost tax revenue when it comes into communities. And I would add to that, the base, Walmart comes in and they cost communities the base of services, which can be the foundation, the stable business foundation for a local community. They're wiped out. They just get wiped out. That Walmart is running ads saying that, you know, a Walmart ad shows an employee and says, I don't think people know how great the benefits are at Walmart. You know, this is an effort to paper over their dismal treatment of workers. In reality, the company provides such measly health care benefits that it encourages workers to seek public assistance. They want you and I, through our taxes, to pay their labor expenses. And they often move workers to part-time jobs in order to avoid covering their benefits. Martha Jones Magazine reported that the average hourly worker at Walmart earns barely $18,000 a year at a company which pocketed $6.6 billion in profits last year. They've been recently accused of locking employees in stores at night, while an internal audit found, quote, extensive violations of child labor laws and state regulations requiring time for breaks and meals, end quote. And the ads undoubtedly deal with the controversial public policy. The more the whitewashing, the less the public might be concerned with the fact that the federal agencies charged with enforcing workplace laws are being choked of resources by the Bush administration. At the behest of Walmart. I mean, Walmart has stepped up their lobbying in Washington, D.C. tremendously. CBS regularly, here's another, there's another industry. CBS regularly runs ads by an ad by Pfizer in which the company says, Pfizer is helping people in need get the medicines they need. End quote. The ads run just weeks after Pfizer successfully lobbied to weaken the new Medicare bill so that it does not significantly lower drug prices. Meanwhile, Time magazine reports Pfizer is actively working to, quote, shut down the Canadian pipeline, end quote, for seniors who are struggling to get lower-priced medicines. Pfizer is also, quote, aggressively seeking a pharmaceutical blacklist, warning Canadian pharmacies that if they sell drugs to Americans, Pfizer will halt supply of all its products, end quote. Meanwhile, as Pfizer wages its war to keep prices high and whitewash its record, it pocketed $9.1 billion in pure profits, a 28% profit margin, more than twice that of General Electric, nine times that of Walmart, and 31 times that of General Motors. But CBS will run their ads. The New York Times reports that CBS will allow drug companies like Eli Lilly to engage in controversial direct-to-consumer drug advertising during the Super Bowl, the practice which used to be outlawed until the drug industry got in there and they started, you know, hey, legislators, you got to change the laws on the... I mean, why would a drug company advertise a product which you can't buy? You have to go to a doctor to get. I mean, shouldn't the doctors be making the decisions about this and not the consumers? We're having increasingly, doctors are complaining about the fact that consumers are showing up on their doorsteps saying, I saw an ad for an Acme product, this new drug, Wizerol, and I need that. And the doctor's like, well, you know, isn't that my decision to make? Apparently not. Apparently not. The practice, which used to be outlawed, has been criticized by senators, consumer groups, and physicians for grossly misleading the public about pharmaceuticals and interfering with the doctor-patient relationship. This is just, you know, emblematic of what's wrong here, and it also clearly tells us how we can fix it. We need to level the playing fields again. We need to go back to rules and laws. If people want to play the game of business, they have to play it in ways that serve the community as well as make a profit. And it's just very straightforward. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Terry in California is on the line. Hey, Terry, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. When you're talking about the media, I'd like to point out something that's come to my attention that I've really become upset about, and it has to do with PBS. I noticed that basically Kucinich and I guess Sharpton too have both just fallen off of their coverage of the debates. When they discuss the debates on like the Jim McNeil or Jim Lehrer news show, they just refer to it as the front runners, and that's all they talk about. They don't even mention it, Kucinich or Sharpton. And then yeah. I noticed the other night on Bill Moyers on his Now show, they were talking about the sad state of the Kyoto Treaty. And how it's being just overrun by the lobbyists that Bush sent to Milan to just basically kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end they talked about where do the front runners, and this is the term that they are using all throughout PBS, the front runners is all they cover in the Democratic debate, and where do the front runners stand on it? And they said, and they basically made their case that they all were, you know, against or had given up on the Kyoto Treaty. They didn't even mention Kucinich has got a very strong environmental statement on it, how he wants to, you know, get back involved with the international community on environmental rights.
Yeah. Well, this raises an interesting question, Terry. If let's say it wasn't Dennis Kucinich, but it was David Duke, who is a Democrat or was a Democrat.
It would be fine.
Let me finish my sentence here.
Okay.
And he's pulling only 1% or 2% in the polls. Do you think that he would merit coverage?
I believe that if there are any person that is putting themselves up there and is you know standing up and trying to involve themselves in the national debate to keep the discussion open, if they're up there, then they deserve to be heard, regardless of what their stance is. It's not for the media to evaluate who we get to look at or listen to or evaluate.
But Terry, there's like in the Republican primary in New Hampshire, which is happening on Tuesday, there's 38 candidates on the ballot. I don't know how many there are in the Democratic primary, but I would guess it's probably closer to 50. Should all of them have something to say?
I believe that they should all be, yes, they should all be covered. They should. The press is to present them to us, not to evaluate who we should get to have options on.
So you think that even the most fringe can't... This is not... Again, I'm not speaking here of Dennis Kucinich. I have tremendous respect for him, and I think that he should be getting coverage. But the fact of the matter is that these six or eight who have been showing up in the debates are not the only candidates who are running on the Democratic side, for that matter.
Look at the topsy-turvy thing that happened in Iowa. I mean, everybody was putting Dean at the top, and Kerry was almost at the bottom. All of a sudden, flip-flop. I mean, it's just absurd that the media, who is using our public airways, is turning around and using them as a censoring. They're the editor for our information we get. We can't make a decision if they don't present this information to us.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, we need to go back to a situation where the candidate, well, not even going back to, I mean, we need to go forward to a situation where candidates have free airtime. The problem, though, that you face is, you know, for example, in New Hampshire, you've got, you know, 30-some-odd people who are running against George Bush in the Republican primary, and yet probably none of them are going to get more than 50 or 100 votes. And is it really worth the time of the press looking at that case? And of you and I, for that matter, to be hearing these people with their opinions. I mean, a lot of them are running on you know, little issues and things like that. At what point do you cut it off? How do you make that decision?
It's a tough one, I think.
Go ahead, Terry. You got 10 seconds.
We worked it out here in California. We had 150-some-odd people. And the ones that were worth it came to the top.
Yeah. Well, I see, that's what I would say the press would say they're doing right now. But, you know, you and I agree that Dennis Kucinich should be getting, and Al Sharpton, too, should be getting a lot more coverage. Thanks for the call, Terry. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. And we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. 2 full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1. $400,000.
First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Show.
Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're gonna kill him, okay.
Gonna kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons of mass destruction?
Weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Okay,
if they flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Dixie moonlight, swan is shore, headed homebound just once more to my Mississippi Delta home.
Basin clear evidence of peril.
Southland's got
we cannot wait for the final proof. The smoking gun.
Although you
it could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. How will a... Time Mag... Have you seen the cover story for this week's Time Magazine? They get into this whole thing about basically debunking the pharmaceutical industry's claim that, we need all these high prices in order to pay for our R&D, right? Research and development. However... They have, quote, waged a 9-year legal battle with the General Accounting Office to keep the information secret, end quote, about how much they spend on R&D. And the reason why is that out of the 21 most important drugs introduced between 1965 and 1992, that nearly a 30-year period, a 27-year period, of the 21 most important drugs, 15 of them were developed with our taxpayer dollars. They came out of federally funded research by the National Institutes of Health. They fund 36% of all U.S. medical research. Now, the drug companies say, we got R&D. But instead, they've got advertising, and they've got profits, and they've got CEOs making millions, tens of millions of dollars. I mean, what possibly justifies a salary of tens of millions of dollars? What possibly would justify that? And now, and then they got into the Medicare bill, and said, hey, you know, make it so that the government can't even negotiate prices like they do in Canada, like the Pentagon does for the veterans. And then they have the audacity to say, well, when you buy our drugs in the United States, they're safe. But if you buy them in Canada, they're not. Where are the dead Canadians? They're not there. Strangest thing. So Anyhow, we got corporate America run amok and the American middle class collapsing. What can we do about it? We can show up at the polls. If you're in New Hampshire, be sure to vote this week. And anywhere else in the United States, get ready and make sure you're registered. This is Tom Hartman, exposing the con in conservative.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
A chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued.
Two of them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in Nashua, New Hampshire. Voters all over the state of New Hampshire braved sub-zero wind chills on Sunday to hit the streets for their candidates as the whirlwind campaign moved closer to Tuesday's first primary of the 2004 presidential elections. Candidates crisscrossed the state trying to meet the committed voters and swing the state's substantial undecided block, estimated to be between 8 and 15% of the state's voters. John Kerry, Howard Dean, Joe Lieberman, John Edwards, and Dennis Kucinich all made campaign appearances in the Granite State on Sunday. The sixth remaining Democratic candidate, Reverend Al Sharpton, campaigned in South Carolina on Sunday. The outgoing chief U.S. weapons inspector says his inability to find illicit arms in Iraq raises serious questions about American intelligence gathering. Last year, David Kay had confidently predicted weapons would be found, but after 9 months of searching, he said Sunday, "I don't think they exist." Kay's comments also drew an "I told you so" response from Hans Blix, the former chief UN inspector whose work was heavily criticized by Kay and came to an end when the United States went to war with Iraq. Blix said the United States should have known the intelligence was flawed last year when leads followed up by UN inspectors didn't produce any results. U.S. forces aided by Iraqis searched the muddy waters of the Tigris River Monday in northern Iraq for a soldier and two pilots missing after a helicopter crashed while searching for a river patrol boat that had capsized. Two Iraqi policemen and an Iraqi translator accompanying the American soldiers in the patrol boat were killed in the incident, said a military spokesman. But one soldier was still missing while three others survived, she said. The OH-58D Kiowa Warrior helicopter, attached to the 101st Airborne Division, crashed in the Tigris in the northern town of Mosul on Sunday evening. Japan formally ordered the dispatch of ground troops into Iraq in the country's first full deployment to a combat zone since World War II. Ending months of anguished debate, Defense Agency Chief Shigeru Ishiba issued the order covering the 600 troops hours after Prime Minister Yunichiro Koizumi and the leader of the junior ruling coalition party agreed to send Japanese soldiers into Iraq. More news after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
A man dubbed the cruelest farmer in Britain faced jail on Friday after plunging a woman vet and an animal health inspector into a pit of manure. Veterinary Surgeon Susan Potter and Animal Health Inspector Jonathan McCulloch were filming a dead lamb and emaciated cattle on his land in Cornwall when the attack took place last February. This is Don Waller in Nashua, New Hampshire.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
To know what the future holds, call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, Matthew.
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
George W. has come up with a bold idea that I enthusiastically support. Bush says he wants to go to the moon and to Mars, and I, for one, see no reason not to send him there. Who are we to stand in the way of progress? Unfortunately, it turns out that he didn't mean that he'd go, but that America should launch a new mission into space, along with launching multi-billions of our tax dollars out there, too. Actually, he's already taken us to the moon in terms of deficit spending. In only 3 short years, he turned America's $240 billion federal surplus into a $530 billion budget deficit. He's committed future generations to spending untold billions for his never-ending world war. He ran through a sweetheart prescription drug bill that will dole out $17 billion tax dollars a year to the drug giants. He is demanding that his multi-billion dollar annual tax giveaway to America's richest people be made permanent. And now he wants us to buy him a Mars shot? Hey, George, how about a new Game Boy instead? His aides say that Bush's proposal is about presidential vision. Yeah, and you need the Hubble telescope to see where he's looking. This fuzzy-minded, big-budget Mars scheme does 2 things to advance his real agenda. 1, it hauls space shuttles full of tax dollars into the vaults of some of his biggest campaign contributors. For decades into the future, corporate contractors will fatten themselves at this trough. 2, it will empty our public treasury of any remaining possibility to finance things we really need, such as good health care for everyone, true educational excellence available to every child, and a crash program to give America energy independence by developing our country's vast alternative energy sources. This is Jim Hightower saying, George W.'s big idea isn't about vision. It's about blinding us to the true potential of our great nation. A potential that won't be found in the stars, but in the down-to-earth people of America's grassroots.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. Is the revolution beginning against corporate America, against I want to say greedy. It has to be. There has to be a mental illness associated with this. Being willing, here's, for example, let me just start at the beginning here. Daniel J. Steininger is the chairman of the Catholic Funds. It's a $30 million fund in Milwaukee. And he submitted a proposal to the Securities and Exchange Commission that they've targeted 7 companies that a shareholder proposal, rather, that the CEOs pay not exceed 100 times that of the average worker. Now, back in the old days, I mean back a century ago, J.P. Morgan suggested that executives should never earn more than 20 times the pay of the lowest level employees. And although, you know, he made a lot of money on the equity that he owned, the stock that he owned in his own company, he kept his own pay within those limits. But here we have, and for example, in Japan, the CEO of a corporation typically earns 10 times as much as the most lowly paid employee. In Germany, it's 11 times. In France, 16 times. In Canada, 21 times. In Britain, 25 times. In Mexico, 45 times. In Brazil, 57 times. In the United States, 531 times. What would possibly justify this? In a letter, this is from the New York Times yesterday, in a letter asking the SEC to exclude the proposal, Cendant Corporation, C-E-N-D-A-N-T, said it would, quote, impose a constraint on the salary of its chief executive, Henry R. Silverman. Brian Foley, a compensation expert in White Plains, said that from 1998 to 2002, Mr. Silverman received $36.6 million in salary and bonus and reaped $223 million from exercising stock options. He had unexercised options worth $46 million, and his life is insured for $100 million at a cost to shareholders of $6.5 million. And Cendant will pay Mr. Silverman $83,000 a month after retirement. You know, is this reasonable and rational in America? I think not. It's time for we the people to speak up and say, you know, enough of this nonsense. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Joe in Brookings, Oregon's on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yes, I don't know. I just want to make sure I'm not getting you confused with someone else. Haven't I heard you in the past complain about the fact that, you know, if you had, like, Abraham Lincoln running for president these days, that there's no way an Abe Lincoln would have a chance in hell of winning because of all the factors about, you know, he was kind of homely looking and all that. Have I heard you talk about that sort of thing in the past?
No, you haven't.
Oh, okay. Well, then I've heard other people talk about that. You know, the connection about, New Hampshire, you were talking to a previous caller about the 38 people running against President Bush in the Republican primaries.
Right.
Well, it seems like to me there would be plenty of time. It's not like you wouldn't have to have all these people up on the same stage at the same time. You could obviously have a series of debates. You know, let's consider the fact that CNN is on 24 hours a day, Fox News Channel, CNBC, MSNBC. What do they do with that 24 hours, you know, right now? They shove all this crap down our throats about Kobe Bryant and all this other nonsense. And when you consider the fact, you know, that the news media already wants to declare the winners to go into the general election by the time the New Hampshire primary is over, to me that, you know, just shows how important the New Hampshire primary is. So we should hear from everybody that manages to make it on the ballot. They certainly have more than enough time on TV to cover all of these candidates when you think about it.
Well, they would argue that we don't have any business telling them how much time they have, and we would argue that it's the people's airwaves, thank you very much, or at least it was before Ronald Reagan sold them off. And they would say, no, Ronald Reagan sold them off, and you guys are out in the cold. Tough luck. I agree with you at a state level. If you've got 30-some-odd candidates in New Hampshire who are running for president against George Bush, and they're different from the 30-odd candidates in South Carolina who are running against George Bush, or who are running against the other Democrats, then, you know, in those individual states, it's appropriate for there to be some coverage of them. But I can tell you that a lot of these candidates are extremely flaky. I mean, just extremely flaky. They are protest candidates or they are vanity candidates. And frankly, I don't think that they represent news.
Well,
so I mean, should somebody, just because somebody pays the $200 filing fee, entitle them to time on national television? I don't think so.
Well, let me address the flakiness issue. You have someone like Lyndon LaRouche that would obviously be considered a flaky and fringe, right? Well, in 1996, he was running in the Democratic Party primaries and caucuses against President Bill Clinton, and he was getting as much as 35 to 40% of the vote in caucuses in North Dakota and some of these other places. In fact, he actually got more than 10% of the vote in California. The Democratic Party in California found it necessary to steal 50,000 votes away from Lyndon LaRue so he wouldn't get the press coverage that would come with getting double digits in California. Now think about it. This shows you ahead of time what was going on with the Democratic Party, that there were a lot of Democrats out there who obviously were fed up with the Clinton administration at that time, and that was that, and a lot of people were basically saying to Bill Clinton and the Democratic Party that they were fed up with the conservative direction that the Democratic Party was moving in. Now, obviously, to me, that is a news story that never got picked up on, even by the so-called alternative media.
Yeah, so you're suggesting there's a conspiracy to silence Lyndon LaRouche and other... And
No, that's not my point at all. My point is, you know, even when it comes to somebody considered to be flaky or that sort of thing, that isn't necessarily should be a disqualification from someone getting media coverage.
Yeah, well, we agree to disagree then, Joe. I don't think just because somebody paid a couple hundred bucks to get on a ballot that they have the right to media coverage. But, you know, I appreciate your perspective. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Our old friend Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin.
Hey, thank you. There's something else that a lot of people may not realize about Sendak. And they own Century 21 Real Estate, ERA Mount Vernon Real Estate, and Caldwell Banker Real Estate, too. They are huge.
Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, how else could they pay their CEO a couple hundred million dollars a year in salary and stock options?
You wonder what he really does and for the money. And you were talking about the National Institutes of Health. They have some senior officials there that are not only taking a paycheck from us, the taxpayer, but they're also, at the same time, consultants with huge salaries, you know, our fees, excuse me, of hundreds of thousands of dollars while they're supposed to be representing us.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And thanks for that, Armin. I appreciate your call. In fact, we see the same thing here. Representative W.J. Billy Towson of Louisiana is close to a decision to leave Congress. This from the Washington Post today, or Saturday, is close to leaving Congress to head the Pharmaceutical Industries Trade Association. It's called PhRMA. Most recently, he was one of the principal. Keep in mind, this is the guy who was one of the lead authors of the Medicare bill, which included several provisions expected to vastly expand the market for prescription drugs among the elderly. In addition to adding hundreds of billions of dollars for drug benefits, the law bars the federal government from directly bargaining down the price of drugs, a provision PhRMA pressed for. Now they're paying him back. If Towson accepts, a source said, quote, it would be the biggest deal given to anyone at a trade association, end quote. You can bet old Billy Towson is going to be a multimillionaire coming out of this thing. And he's not the first. In December, Thomas A. Scully, an author of the bill, another guy who helped write this Medicare bill, resigned as administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, a part of the Department of Health and Human Services, to join an Atlanta law firm that represents drug makers, hospitals, and other healthcare businesses. Now, Towson is so eager to get this cash that he's thinking about actually resigning his seat early so they'll have to call a special election to fill it so he can go join PhRMA and lobby his peers for more of the same. Al Sharpton, did you see this in the New York Times this weekend? The article by Michael Slackman, he actually did some good investigative reporting here. Al Sharpton has had help shaping his message from an unlikely source, a guy named Roger Stone. Roger Stone worked for Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, and George W. Bush. And Roger Stone has become essentially the prime consultant to the Sharpton campaign. You know, here's the article. Michael Slackman says, Al Sharpton has delighted in skewering Dr. Dean, with Mr. Sharpton generating one of Dr. Dean's lowest moments in a debate when he forced him to admit he had no blacks or Hispanics in his cabinet when he was governor of Vermont. The developer Donald Trump, who knows Mr. Stone, this Republican, this right-wing Republican who's advising Al Sharpton, says, quote, "I saw Roger's fingerprints all over that," end quote. So they went and they talked to some of Sharpton's aides, the people who work on his staff. And the aide said that he consults with Mr. Stone about once a week, and that Mr. Stone helped give shape and purpose to a campaign that was floundering. Mr. Stone has advised Mr. Sharpton before national debates, encouraged him to implement a rapid response system, and introduced him to the man who became his national campaign manager, Charles Halloran. In the attacks on Dr. Dean, for example, Mr. Stone helped set the tone and direction, while Mr. Halloran did the research. Halloran came up with Dr. Dean's hiring record as governor, for example, aides to Mr. Sharpton said. Al Sharpton, Republican tool. Well, he's good buddies with Tucker Carlson. I mean, is there a shill for the Republicans in among the Democrats? And if so, does he deserve press coverage? Should he, you know, if all the stuff that Al Sharpton is shoveling out against Dean and the other candidates is coming from a consultant to the Republican Party, should that be part of the Democratic dialogues? Yeah, these are, you know, well, what's free speech? What's it, you know, in a democracy? What, and this is, you know, we're the media at some level, and also the institutions of governance that control the elections are saying, you know, what's a real candidate and what's not? Who's viable and who isn't? These are, you know, it's a legitimate area for debate. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the true people's radio. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news. You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Your right to vote. It's something that most Americans take for granted. But today, serious questions are being asked about how we vote. Machines are used to process 98% of the votes in U.S. elections, and that includes absentee ballots. How do we know if our votes are being counted correctly? Experts say we don't know. that machines conceal the voting process, that whoever controls the machines controls the election. What is the government doing to protect your right to vote? There is no federal agency that regulates or monitors the voting machine industry. There are no restrictions on who can make, sell, or service voting equipment. They don't even have to be U.S. citizens. And there are no mandatory federal standards for voting equipment. Even if there were, experts say that voting machines can be easily rigged and impossible to safeguard. I'm Lynn Landis. I'm an investigative journalist. Learn more about this issue at my website, ecotalk.org. That's ecotalk.org.
You hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah,
you
I was
know.
Expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the Afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman. Governments across Southeast Asia. This is a, you know, shifting topics here a little bit. I think this is an important story. By the way, before I get to that, let me share with you our quote for the day from Herbert Hoover. Older men declare war, but it's the youth who must fight and die. The tragedy of our times. Okay, here we have the situation where they are now, I think a seventh or eighth country has come up with bird flu in Southeast Asia. And it's normal about three or four times a century that there's a flu epidemic, a pandemic, a serious epidemic. The last one was in 1918-1919, and 50 million people died around the world with what was called the Spanish flu. And it was right after World War One, and they're very concerned that this flu, which is a very potent influenza, it's killed 6 or 8 people now in Southeast Asia. It typically doesn't infect humans. It doesn't have the genes to easily infect and easily transmit from human to human. But the concern is that if somebody catches the bird flu, which is now spread across 6 or 8 countries and millions of domesticated birds, and presumably is being carried around these regions by migrating, you know, wild ducks and things, that if somebody with the human flu catches the bird flu, that the viruses will exchange genes, which viruses do very easily, and a new flu will emerge, which is the human variation of this bird flu. And it could be mind-bogglingly dangerous. So, you know, let's keep our eyes on what's going on in Southeast Asia. What's coming out of that? This is a story. This like the story about the shutdown of the thermal hailing currents, the shutdown of the Gulf Stream, is something that I think is very large and very underreported. Or, you know, we don't want to panic people. You don't want to scare people, have them have nightmares and things. But on the other hand, when you look at the priorities, I mean, why aren't we over there helping, for example? The money that we are spending in Iraq or on other absurd things. I mean, you know, all of the pork, the billions of dollars in subsidies we're giving to our nuclear companies and our oil industry and our gas industries and you know, if we were to spend some of that protecting the public health You know, let's develop a vaccine for this, or let's get over there and participate in trying to control the epidemic among the birds. Let's do something about global warming. I mean, there are some very real problems. Global warming, by the way, is really a misnomer. It shouldn't be called global warming. It should be called global climate change. And in fact, in most parts of the world, that's what it's called. Because the odds are what it will lead to is cooling in the northern hemisphere and warming at the equator by shutting down the Gulf Stream, which takes heat away from the equator and transports it all the way up to almost to the coast of Greenland. And it's just mind-boggling, the potential of that. I want to get back into some of Cheney's latest distortions. Dick Cheney, some of the strange stories he's telling. And we'll get back to your calls. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Anything on your mind? I'm interested in your thoughts on the primary that's going to be happening tomorrow in New Hampshire. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
There's a lot more to hibernation than a long, deep sleep. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The cartoon bear gorges itself until the fall when it curls up in its den and falls asleep, waking up stretching and yawning after the spring thaw. Not surprisingly, that picture of hibernation is very misleading. Hannah Carey is a veterinary researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison who studies hibernating ground squirrels. She says hibernation actually includes frequent periods of activity.
No mammalian hibernators, these squirrels or any of the other mammals that hibernate, go through the entire winter in the cold stored state without undergoing what we call a periodic arousal. They all arouse periodically. Basically, it's like turning on the engine of a car.
Carey says it's not known why hibernating animals stir every few days because many, including ground squirrels, don't eat or drink during these periods. And Carey says hibernation is not triggered by environmental cues such as decreasing sunlight, temperature, and food. Instead, she says hibernation is governed by some kind of internal clock. The ground squirrels she studies want to hibernate with or without cold weather, no matter how long the daylight or how much food they have.
We trap them or collect them in the summertime. They live in this animal facility that's a normal room temperature and all the food and water they want. Around October, they will try to hibernate in this warm room. Their brains tell them it's time.
Carey says it's not known if hibernation provides the rejuvenating effects of normal sleep. She says some scientists even contend that hibernators need to sleep during their arousal periods because hibernation tires them out. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We the people will defeat the evildoers.
Yeah, welcome back here in the Democracy Zone. I'm Tom Hartman, and it is 26 minutes before the hour here on the IE America Radio Network. David Kaye, who until Friday was chief arms inspector in Iraq, has, quote, concluded that Iraq had no stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons at the start of the war last year. Kaye's statements, quote, undermined one of the primary justifications set out by President Bush for the war in Iraq, end quote. Adding fuel to the fire, Secretary of State Colin Powell admitted that Iraq may not have had weapons of mass destruction after all, calling into question his own assurances to the contrary at the United Nations last February. And despite this, the administration continues to insist, or at least Dick Cheney does, that Iraq, quote, possessed stores of banned weapons. On Friday, White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan insisted, yes, we believe he had them, and yes, we believe they will be found. Yeah, right. The administration, well, let me get to this after a call here. We've got Rich from Chicago on the line. Hey, Rich, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES.
Yeah, hey, Tom, how you doing? I love listening to the show. Really great, insightful information. Yeah, I was listening to you earlier talk about CEOs and their wages and stuff like that, and I've been thinking about this lately. I'm a self-employed guy, work on my own, you know, make a decent living, and I want for nothing, and therefore I feel like I'm rich, you know? But
yeah.
When I was young, you know, did you ever fantasize, hopefully one day I'll be a millionaire? And we used to always speak in millions, and that was a large number. Now, older, you turn on the TV, everything is in billions and trillions. And people make tens of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars. When did this change, I'm wondering?
It started with Reagan.
When is enough enough, you know?
Yeah, it started with Reagan. Reagan was the catalyst. I mean, he was the first conservative of the modern conservative era, you know, of the let's restore aristocracy and feudalism and destroy and dismantle democracy. And he started this process with this massive deregulation, stopped enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act, which led to the mergers and acquisition mania, which led to these huge corporate conglomerates and monopolies, and began the process of eviscerating, disemboweling the middle class of America. I mean, just wiping out the middle class.
Absolutely, you're right. And so the middle class now suffers as a result. But what I notice, though, and I work with a lot of different laborers and a lot of unions, and I'm nothing against unions. I think they're right for what they were intended for. But what I notice is totally at the top scale and totally at the bottom scale, no matter where I work in the country, everybody feels like they have to get theirs. So therefore, they come in and they maybe give 2 hours of solid work for an 8-hour time card that they're going to pass in, or they won't necessarily do the work because they feel like they're working underneath a corporation that's making so much money that they have to therefore get theirs. And so there's less quality there. And then you walk away from a job site and you
Rich,
wonder,
haven't you seen this among non-union employees as well?
Well, oh, absolutely. Union and non-union throughout the country, but it discredits everybody. And we
yeah,
all
I, you know, I don't disagree, but the fact that you've got some people who are just incompetent workers is not I don't think an indictment of unions.
Oh,
when
no,
unions
I'm not
work
trying.
To work to keep incompetent workers in place, that's a legitimate concern.
Right.
But that is, you know, demonstrably not the purpose of a union. The purpose of a union is to balance the power relationship between the employer and the employees.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. It's just that in certain places I can go into, you know, cities mostly in the steel belt, you'll go into and you pay you know, triple the amount for the amount of work that you would get. You know, as you
triple the amount over what?
Well, like if I did the same project in the South or someplace else, or you know, where people were maybe more proud to work than I would in some cities. You know, actually, I'm getting off the point, but it just seems to me that they remind me the same as a greedy CEO when I have to go in and somebody, you know, punches their time card and then comes back and demands the money that I have to pay for, but they didn't do the work, you know.
Well, I'd say if they're earning triple what, for example, you might be able to hire an illegal immigrant for, or triple minimum wage, which leaves people below the poverty line, then they're probably earning a middle-class income. And you have a situation where if we were to simply raise the minimum wage in the United States up to $12, $13, $14 an hour, something in that neighborhood, which is a living wage in most parts of this country, then what you're suggesting is that poverty-level wages should be the standard against what we measure, you know, somebody who's got a good job or a union job. And I don't think that's right.
When you come in and you work into an area, you just always assume that you're going to get an honest day's work for the honest dollar or whatever.
You do.
But if you leave an area where you've got a bad taste in your mouth, why do you want to go back there and work? So some people sure. feel in order to get what they deserve, they have to do whatever they can to, you know, triple the books, if you will. You know what I mean? Come in on a call, then go to another call, not necessarily be there, not deliver the work, so they can make as much money as possible. They leave such a bad taste in everybody's mouth, and they never come back. You know?
I mean, you know, there was that expose on 60 Minutes a couple of years ago about the janitor in New York City school system who had a boat and all these things, you know, and he was illegally punching the clock. What, you're always going to have people who game the system or abuse the system. But the bottom line is that if we want to have a decent standard of living in America, not you and me individually, but if we want to live in a country where you don't have people sleeping on the streets, if you want to live in a country where you don't have to worry about crime because there is a strong middle class, as we had in the United States in the 1930s, in the 1940s, certainly, the 1950s, the 1960s, and the 1970s, until Reagan got into power and started taking this whole thing apart. I mean, we didn't have homeless people in the 70s. They came with Reagan, number one, you know, cutting protections for workers and deregulating industries, and number two, slashing funding for mental hospitals. And just closing the doors and kicking people out on the streets. And if you want to have a decent standard of living, a decent quality of life surrounding you, we have to have people who are actually paid an honest day's pay for an honest day's work. And an honest day's pay in the United States is no longer $8 an hour. It's just not. You can't raise a family on that. You can't pay for medical expenses on that. You can't plan for retirement on that. And we have to come back and say, what's a reasonable threshold? You know, I think even $10, $11, $12 is too low, frankly.
Yeah, two more quick comments, if you don't mind, sir.
Sure.
One is, you know, when I hear about these tax cuts and everything that the president talks about, what I don't understand is how people are suckered into this. You know, you give me $300 or $600 or $1,200, every one of my local taxes, everything that my retirement taxes, everything that I have to contribute to is all blowing out the seams. So you're giving me $100 in one pocket, and you're taking $1,000 out in the other pocket. I think it's the biggest scam.
It is, and this is you know, Howard Dean has been the one who has been pointing this out in the face of everybody else trying to pretend that it's not that's not the truth. And you know, John Kerry saying, "Well, I'm going to preserve the middle tax class tax cut," and Howard Dean comes along and says, "There was no middle class tax cut.
Absolutely
your property
not.
Taxes went up. You know,
everything went up. You know."
Yeah, but see, I think that maybe that's a concept that's too sophisticated for most people to get. Just like the idea that maybe Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11.
Right.
Apparently, about 60% of our population has not figured that one out yet either. It's like, you know, I have come to the conclusion that there is a significant portion of America that just doesn't watch the news, doesn't read the newspaper, and the only things that they know are the things that they hear from advertising. And
wow.
Advertising, you know, and the political advertising every 4 years defines their opinions.
I'm thankful that I found your radio show and this station on the Internet. It's really, really refreshing. Then one more comment. Did you see 60 Minutes last night about Halliburton?
I did.
Pardon me?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. That was pretty insightful. But with that, I'll let you go and keep up the good work. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks for the call. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. The administration handed the inspections over to Charles A. Duffler. Now that David Kaye has left, Duffler has, quote, expressed skepticism that the United States and its allies would find any banned chemicals or biological agents, end quote. But he will take the paycheck and take the job, after all. There's a consensus in an interview with the New York Times. Quote, Kaye said there is now a consensus within the U.S. intelligence community that mobile trailers found in Iraq and initially believed to be mobile bioweapons labs were designed to produce hydrogen for weather balloons or perhaps to produce rocket fuel. But Cheney, in an interview last Friday, said, we found some semi-trailers we think were part of a WMD program. Strikingly, Cheney said the mobile labs were conclusive evidence that Saddam Hussein had programs for weapons of mass destruction, end quote. When your vice president is lying to you, brazenly, contradicting his own administration, you know that there's a problem in the United States. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, and Roy from Rio Rancho, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. So many things, so little time.
Yeah.
It's amazing. The trouble with the Halliburton thing on 60 Minutes last night is there was very little that I didn't already know about that. Of course, you had to poke around. You had to read about it over on Guardian or The Independent or Financial Times or the Israeli, you know.
Well, this was a big deal in the United States, though. I mean, this was the first time that the major national media in America had actually paid any attention to this.
That was the only good news. I was listening to Doug Steffens this morning, and he was reviewing Nancy Skinner's run for the Senate in Illinois. Mm-hmm. She has came up to where she is ranked number 3 in downstate Illinois. And the Tribune editors aren't even inviting her for the senatorial campaign interviews.
You're kidding.
No. That's what she said on the paper on Doug's show this morning.
Yeah.
Why? Because she's just a talk show host and she's that.
Yeah.
But it was when Rich called, I said, I got to call and do this. Rich, if you're still listening, get your friends and get out there and raise Cain with the Tribune.
Yeah.
There is just so much, but that one, I thought, just dovetailed into the whole media censorship. Now, that's a newspaper. They're not required to. I don't expect them to, but it says something about how much you can trust the Chicago Tribune.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If you think that the problem with news is that most of the news organizations are now under the purview of the entertainment divisions of the huge corporations that own them, I think, frankly, a debate with, you know, like over in New Hampshire, there's a candidate who's into flying saucer abductions. There's a candidate who's into, he's basically a Nazi. You've got some really strange folks.
Kobe Bryant and all
I think that these guys would be entertaining.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you want to have debates that are entertaining, why don't you invite a few of these guys? You know, fringe candidates, but still, it's democracy. On the other hand, these stations and networks and newspapers, entirely money-driven now, and no longer with any concern for the public service.
And with
saying,
a bigger chunk of the market.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
with
they're
the
saying...
Omnius. Anyway, let you go, but keep up the good work and... everybody in Illinois, get out and support Nancy. Talk to you guys.
There you
later.
Go. Yeah, Nancy Skinner is a true gem. She is an extraordinary gift to Illinois, and I wish her well in the senatorial campaign. SkinnerTheWinner.com is her website, by the way, if you're curious. Gerald in Long Island is on the line. Hey, Gerald, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
How you doing? I was listening earlier talking about unions.
Yeah.
And I just want to throw my 2 cents in, if it's even worth 2 cents. My experience with unions have been, I don't see them, on one hand, they're pretty good for people, but I also see them hurting a lot. In a sense, in my experience, when I go, like I have to go to the VA in Manhattan a lot, and it's all unionized, and the services you get, the people know they can't get fired, and they just don't, you know, the service that, I don't know how to put it, the service you get just isn't up to standard.
It's better than at Walmart?
No, at a VA hospital. I'm a disabled veteran. I have to go.
Yeah, I understand. So you're saying that this the service you're getting from a union member at the VA is worse than the service you get from a terrified poverty level person at Walmart?
Well, I don't know. To be honest with you, I haven't been in a Walmart lately.
Yeah.
But
Here's the thing, Gerald. You're always going to find I have stories of. That I could tell, too, of times that I've dealt with union employees that I thought were less than satisfying when I own small businesses. But the reality is, I mean, the bottom line here is that there has to be something that we could easily, equally, you and I, right now, could come up with a list of corporate abuses that are even worse, of corporations that are ripping us off, of corporations that are making obscene profits. I mean, just look at the drug companies with their, 20-some-odd percent profits. They're at our expense. And the only thing in America right now, given that government has become so flaccid, the only thing in America right now that's standing up to these corporations are the unions.
Yeah, I mean, I see your point.
It's not a perfect system to have unions balancing corporations, but it's better than corporations being absolutely, completely unrestrained.
Right.
Totally out of control.
But, there's got to be a more of a compromise. I mean, when I was 16, I was in a union. I worked for a Pathmark, a grocery store, and I was a screw-up. I admit it. I was a young kid, and I was a punk, and I wasn't doing my job, and they wanted to fire me, and they couldn't. The union guy came in. It was right before Christmas. They told me to go out and push carts. It was a wintry, snowy night. And I straight up told the manager, no, I don't want to push carts. It's too cold out.
See, there's a certain point with that kind of thing, Jared, where the corporation should be able to sit down with the union and say, we got a problem with this. I mean, my experience has not been that, I shouldn't get into that whole thing, because I've never run a union shop. But if that's a problem, or where that's a problem, there should be specific remedies for it. I'm not disagreeing with you. And yet, the remedy is not to throw out the unions. Thanks for the call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't.
But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Show.
We caught somebody doing something right. Fred D'Amato, Pocono, Pennsylvania. He put a sign out in his front yard that says, support our troops, impeach the Bush administration. Of course, Mount Pocono jumped all over him. The borough councilman, Francis O'Boyle, said, the last couple words is what's the problem. I don't think it's right to put up a sign like that and say those things. The lawyer says it's protected First Amendment speech. John Finnerty, the borough council president, says, well, if we could all express our thoughts on a piece of plywood, just think what the neighborhood would look like. It might be a slight infringement of First Amendment rights, making him take down his sign. He's facing $500 a day fines for not having his sign. However, the story in the newspaper of Mount Pocono, New York, says that D'Amato removed the sign, but on Sunday said he planned to put it back up again. Well done.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You don't know what's going on.
Oh, yeah, you do. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle, helping you win the water cooler wars. Welcome back. Boy, just to wrap this up here, our program today, the music edited by Brad Walrod, Louise Hartman produced it, and it was engineered in Detroit by the extraordinary Char Jones. Thank you all. And thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up and engaging in fascinating conversation, feeding me a few tips and facts along the way. It's been a great day. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Ann in Florida is on the line. Hey, Ann, your thoughts for the day.
Hi, I'm going to try to make this real quick because I know you're at the end of the show. You were talking about pharmaceutical companies earlier and how much they spend on advertising and things.
Yep.
They also spend a huge amount of money on gifts and lecture fees that are overinflated and consulting fees to people that are members of the National Institute of Health, and they're supposed to be the ones that decide what research institutes in which universities are going to get research funds.
Right. Yeah, and also to doctors. I mean, it's a huge business of putting on conferences for physicians where they get continuing education stuff. And in Hawaii is one of the most popular destinations.
We can't get affordable drugs, but they've got all this money to throw around on advertising and throwing around at these research institutes. And yeah, we're not supposed to get drugs from Canada, but one quick question for everybody. Do you hear Bush complaining about the drugs coming out of Mexico into the United States? You know, the pharmaceutical drugs. I only hear him complaining about Canada.
Yeah. Well, that's really well. Yeah, I wonder why. You don't have an answer to that, but it is. Yeah.
Check our website at www.com for our program.
Kay's comments also drew an I told you so response from Hans Blitz, the former chief UN inspector whose work was heavily criticized by Kay and came to an end when the United States went to war with Iraq. The United States Union intelligence force last year will be caught up by UN to produce any results. So all of this is a sub-zero week on Sunday. Increase for the candidate war when they move to Tuesday's first amendment of 2004 presidential election. Candidate across the state has committed voters to the state's decision to decide to lock up made between 8 and 18% of the state voters. Dr. Howard Dean, Cody, and John Edwards, and the President, all made candidates in Grand Prairie today. The 15th Democratic candidate were also up in the candidates of Carolina on Sunday. The bid for murder that's such a compensate by Raft on 21st full point combat zones in Hall 2. And months of anguish today, defense is to Cheru, issued by the order of the troops, and for the price there and leader of the rule goes away and beats enemy soldiers in Iraq. New forces aided by attacks from muddy waters of the Tiber River Monday on Iraq for assaulting pilots missing after a hard crash while such a server told over the headlines. Turkey police and Iraq translator accompanied the American soldiers at the first floor killed in the incident of those assaultsmen. But one soldier was still missing while three others survived, she said. The OH-58D Kiowa Warrior helicopter attached to the 100th Airborne Division crashed at the Tiber River town of Mosul on Sunday. Morning to this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's 1 in 6 people. What if they don't have or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? To help assure people access to the tools they need, www.populationaction.org.
And often considered as an arrested but waiting on part of the year during the 55% audit.
Iraq, and I think we refuse to listen to him at our peril. So, one more thing before we get into my talk with our guest, John Gordon. I want to mention that the latest Zogby poll has John Kerry at 31% and Howard Dean at 28% in the New Hampshire primary, which is, of course, tomorrow. This is a very big jump for Dean. The last time I had read on the Zogby poll, it had said Kerry at 30%, Edwards at 13%, and then Clark and Dean sharing third at 12%. And now Dean in the last, 24 hours or so has jumped up to 28%. So this is a very exciting, very interesting race now with all of these guys, but particularly that lead position between Kerry and Dean. So tomorrow night's going to be a big night, and I think all of us are beginning to turn our attention to this race, turning our attention to the fact that in 9 months or so, we are going to have an opportunity to elect a new president, and we are going to have an opportunity to really make a change in this government for those of us who care to. So, remember, I'm Marianne Williams, and you can call up anytime today at 1-800-TALK-YES. Get together your own thoughts and get together your own feelings about things and join the conversation. I want to introduce you now to my first guest, author John Gordon. And as I said before, he is the author of a book called Become an Energy Addict. The book is published by Longstreet Press. John Gordon is a professional speaker, energy coach. He's conducted seminars with major organizations. He has a newsletter that reaches thousands throughout the country. And the work that he does also with children at risk, young people at risk, which we will ask him about later in the hour, I think is quite fascinating. I think anything that any of us can do to help us have a little more energy and be a little more focused is not a bad thing. So, John Gordon, welcome to the Marianne Williamson Show.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. First of all, why are we all so tired?
That's a great question. We're so tired because we're expending so much energy and we're not recharging our batteries. And like you said earlier, we're under so much stress that our bodies are just breaking down. And sleep deprivation is a big part of it. But also, as you noted, stress does affect our sleep. So over 90% of doctor visits, I just read a recent study, says that are stress-related, which is pretty scary when you think about it.
What do you think most of our stress is?
Well, it's from everyday life because...
Yes, I was going to say, I know what mine is. Go on, please.
I know personally, too. I mean, I own 3 restaurants. I write and speak, and I have 2 kids, a 5-year-old and 3-year-old, and a marriage. So we're all, I think, so busy these days. I think technology is one cause that we really weren't meant to sit in front of a computer screen 12 hours a day. We really were meant to, you know, as you know, chop wood and carry water.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are spending a lot of time in front of a computer screen, and we're not getting out. We're not exercising. So we're not reducing that tension. We're not reducing that stress. It's just eating us away. And we also have those fear hormones, those stress hormones coursing through our bodies now every day as we get more and more anxiety, more and more nervous. And I think it's also just that collective energy of fear. You put on the news, you watch the CNN, and you read the paper, and every day we're being bombarded with negativity, that it's hard for us to stay above that, to stay positive.
Well, I totally agree with your analysis of the situation, and of course, many people would say, and I'm one of them, so you have to add to my stress by telling me that I have to go out and exercise an hour a day. But the truth, of course, is that the less we do, the more tired we are.
Exactly. The key is what I tell people and I teach people is that we need to make time for our energy. If we put our energy first, then everything else will flow from there. So I'm just asking people to make time for yourself and your energy. And if you do a few things each week, which I call create your energy foundation, that foundation will be a very solid foundation for the rest of your life.
Well, what I like about your book is that it gives me little things that I can do. It's just these little tweaks in a lifestyle. And I think so much, and I think this is true intellectually, emotionally, physically, sometimes it's these changes in our own lifestyle that make all the difference. Don't turn on that, you know, cheap TV show. You could pick up a book instead. Now, when it comes to your ideas about energy, similarly, there are these little things that can make a difference. Tell me what some of those little things are.
Well, some of them is what thousands of people are doing now as a result of my newsletter. It's called the Thank You Walk. For instance, if you just walk for 10 minutes a day, and while you're walking, you say what you're thankful for, you will find that you have less stress and you have more energy. And the reason why this works is because when we walk, we're energizing our physical body. We're producing more endorphins. We're flooding our brain with happy neurotransmitters, which makes us feel happier. But what we're also doing is being thankful. And we know that when we're thankful, the latest neuroscience shows that when we're thankful, we activate the part of our brain associated with positive emotions, whereas when we're stressed, we're activating what's called the amygdala. So every time you're thankful, you're really turning on that part of your brain that's good, and you're deactivating the part that causes you stress and fear.
You know, I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, so it's a little technique that we can do. And I have people even in the office environment, anytime they get stressed, I just start to have them say, okay, I'm thankful that I have this job, even though it's driving me crazy.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as they say their thank yous, they do find they have less stress.
You know, sometimes for myself, I had a therapist once who said to me something about, because I was saying, you know, some people are so kind, some people aren't kind, but why do I put so much more?